This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
You shake my nerves and you rattle my brain. Too much love drives a man insane. You broke my will, but what a thrill. Goodness gracious, great balls of fire. I let you love what I thought it was funny. You came along and woo, now honey. I've changed my mind, this love is fine. It's just great balls of fire. Kisses, baby. Mmm, feels good. Hold me, baby. Well, I want to love you like I love a shoe. You're fine, so kind. Got to tell this world that you're mine, 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 mine.
Good morning. Welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. Jerry Lee Lewis passed away over the weekend. I think it was Friday. He'd been around since the days of Elvis Presley. In fact, he ushered in rock and roll right around the same time that Presley came in. I think he was something around 1954 when he and Presley and a couple others went to Sun Records in Memphis, Tennessee. And that was, a lot of people think that was the blossoming of rock and roll. Anyway, a little tribute to Jerry Lee Lewis. It is Monday, October the 28th. My goodness, it is Halloween. We thank you for being with us on Halloween. We got a lot going on. We are going to be talking in a few minutes with Wayne Cruz of the Competitive Enterprise Institute. And we'll talk about its new report that shows how regulations put on the private sector have radically shifted under the Biden administration. They're adding all kinds of new red tape, making it even tougher for businesses, if it was not tough enough right now. And the Tampa Bay Times has finally come out with its pick for Florida governor 1 week beforehand. And we are going to tell you who it is, and we're going to take a look at it. And while Russia and China are working to dethrone the dollar as the world's currency, there's trouble afoot here in the U.S. bond market. Are we on the precipice of a financial U.S. collapse? Is the good faith and whatever it is in the dollar starting to erode? We're going to take a look. And in our ultimate top 10, we think this is a good one. The top 10 biggest gaffes by Joe Biden. There's been hundreds of them. This was tough. Top 10 biggest gaffes by Joe Biden. All right, so there's a lot going on this morning. The Supreme Court is going to hear two separate legal challenges back-to-back today over just how Harvard University, that's a private school, and the University of North Carolina, that's a public school, how they use affirmative action to select their students. Both schools say their standards have a larger societal goal, one that's been endorsed for decades, to promote a diverse campus for future leaders, which means that you discriminate. Let's be honest. If you want to bring in a certain race because of the color of their skin, then for everyone you bring in with that color skin, are you not denying somebody with another color skin to do that? There are only so many available seats, right? In the schoolroom. So a coalition of Asian American students say the criteria discriminates against them. They call it a racial penalty. And it holds them to selectively higher standards, they say, that many Black and Hispanic students do not have in the efforts by these schools to represent more Hispanics and Blacks in their colleges. So it's very closely watched. And the justices are hearing arguments starting today on this. So we'll see how that ends up playing out. But here's the thing. Once you go down the road of selecting one race over another, you're going to be in trouble. Now, Harvard can get away with it. You know why? Because they're a private school. They can select everybody, anybody they want to select. The difference is that the University of North Carolina gets government funds. And once you start taking government money and you are a public school, then the rules are different. The rules are different. So I would not be surprised if the Supreme Court says Harvard can do whatever they want, while the University of North Carolina, a public school, will not be able to discriminate based on the color of somebody's skin. So it'll be a very interesting case, very closely watched. In the meantime, what's going on down in Arizona with these? We talked about this last week, by the way. The governor of Arizona, his name is Doug Ducey. He's been accused by the Biden administration of trespassing, all because he wants to block the southern border from illegal entry. He's been filling gaps along the Mexican border in Arizona with shipping containers. He's put these huge, he's stacked these huge shipping containers along the border, and then he's run barbed wire across the top of the shipping containers. He announced last week he was going to have crews install shipping containers along the gaps in the border, as we discussed, and it comes 2 weeks after federal officials ordered him to take down the ones he's got up already. He's put some in the southwestern part of the state, apparently. So then Ducey, the governor, sued the Biden administration and requested the courts allow Arizona to keep their 100 shipping containers up and double stacked with the barbed wire. Now, this is really crazy. Here is what the Biden administration says. They want to take these containers down. Now, why would they want to do that? Think about it. Why would they want to take down these blockages, these barriers that allow illegal immigrants to come marching across? Here's what they say. The unauthorized placement of those containers constitutes a violation of federal law and is a trespass against the United States. That trespass is harming federal lands and resources and impeding reclamation's ability to perform its mission. What the hell is its mission? Reclamation. What do they mean, its mission? What is the mission when you've got a border between Mexico and the United States that's open like that? What the heck are they talking about? Now, the border issue falls under the Department of the Interior, and that's where this government response came from in this letter. And they say that the Department of Interior, has been awarded a contract by the Department of Homeland Security to close the gaps. Well, when the hell are they going to close the gaps? When are they going to close the gaps? They have no intention of closing the gaps. They're fighting the state because the state is taking up the responsibility that the federal government dropped. This is why Republicans, especially in the South, I should say in the Southwest, in Texas and in Arizona, and maybe even in California, this is why there's going to be a lot of Republicans coming into Congress because of all of this nonsense. It's really something. And finally, this is speaking about a lot of Republicans. Here in Florida, prospects for Republicans in Florida are really getting better as Democrats face a difficult-to-overcome set of numbers. Republicans are ahead of Democrats in the number of mail ballots and in-person voting so far, as of at least Friday. 24 hours earlier, they were evenly split. And even 5 days before that, the Democrats were ahead. But the Republicans are coming along. Also, Republicans have registered 9 new voters for every 1 Democrat in Florida in the several months leading up to these elections. The Florida has 5.28 million registered Republicans. That's an increase of more than 86,000 from the numbers that they had in the August primary. So it's really changing. Really changing. We'll see how much of a difference it makes when it comes to the elections here. All right, we're going to take our break. And when we come back, Wayne Cruz, and we're going to talk about federal regulators, and the Biden administration.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Listen to the latest pet trends with benefits on the Pet Buzz every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Join pet trendologist Charlotte Reed and veterinarian Dr. Michael Fleck as they talk all things pets. From animal health and wellness, money-saving tips, celebrity gossip, breaking news, and more. Their expert guests are in the know and in the now. To learn more about this unique program and its hosts, tune in to the show on the Tantalk Radio Network.
Caregivers find the support they need on Connecting Caregivers Radio with Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregiver. Heard every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m., Linda and her caring and knowledgeable guests will bring you education, information, and resources, as well as a shoulder for caregivers. That's Connecting Caregivers Radio with Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregiver, where you can find help and hope every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m. right here on the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back on Halloween. Oh, man, oh, man, oh, man. Maybe we'll play some Halloween intro music or exit music here a little later. In the meantime, speaking of Halloween, we've got the Biden administration playing around with federal regulations that influence our private sector businesses. And we're delighted to have Wayne Cruz, who's, by the way, a senior fellow and vice president of policy at the Great Competitive Enterprise Institute. They have come out with a new report, and it portends to show how regulations that have been imposed on the private sector have radically shifted since Biden came in. Wayne, welcome back to Freedom Works.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
Always.
Happy Halloween.
Yes, I was going to say, I'm delaying you from your trick or treating, so we apologize for that, Wayne, but we're glad to get you for a few minutes. So tell us a little bit, first of all, and I know you were very much involved in this, this report by the Competitive Enterprise Institute on how these regulations have changed.
Okay. Yes, the report is called 10,000 Commandments, and I write this thing every year because we don't really know what the hidden tax of the regulatory state is. You may be disgusted by the debt and the deficit and the spending, but you can at least look those up. And that's never been the case for regulatory costs, so I try to compile numbers of rules and regulations, costs where they're available, which is not in very many places. But just to try to give a snapshot, and the big change between Trump and Biden, just to get that out there, is remember, Trump was going to do one in, two out, and he did that for the duration of his term. He also put in place these portals for federal regulatory agency guidance documents, or what I took to calling regulatory dark matter, because you have not just a handful of laws from Congress every year, you have thousands of rules and regulations. But then on top of that, you have all kinds of guidance documents, too, covering all sorts of things, from the bathroom rule to regulating cell phones as for safety in cars, so they have a switch-off mode and things like that. So there are a lot of ways that the agencies are acting. Biden came in and immediately did a modernizing regulatory review executive order, and he swept away all of the Trump 1 and 2 out. The designation that Trump had for deregulatory rules, because, of course, under progressives, you know, you're not going to see very many of those.
Apparently not.
And then he eliminated the databases. So now the regulators are unleashed. And I'd say, Paul, the thing to be concerned about here now, and I was just glancing at some new numbers on this morning, is we are now in the wake of a massive torrent of legislation. And Biden calls it Build Back Better. Others around the world call it Reset. For a long time, it's been plain old progressivism. But we've had the Coronavirus Families Act. We've had the CARES Act. We've had the American Rescue Plan from Biden, Biden's inflation bill, Biden's infrastructure bill, and Biden's so-called innovation bill. These things spend hundreds of trillions of dollars. And I'm here to tell you that is going to translate, and we're starting to see it in the numbers now, that's going to translate into ever greater numbers of regulations, too. And since regulations are largely off the books, policymakers have really got to stay on top of it, and maybe in the new Congress, with Biden still there, they're not going to get regulatory reform, but they can at least put some hearings in place and put some reports out on transparency so that a future administration that is inclined toward deregulation or liberalization, as last time that happened was back in the 90s, but the next time anyone in Congress and a president gets concerned about job creation and small business and commerce and capitalism and free enterprise and all of that, they can at least lay some of the groundwork in this new Congress. And I hope this new report helps with some of that.
I'm sure it will. And it makes people realize, too, I think, that the executive department is doing things that really was never intended to do by our founding fathers, in my humble opinion. With all of these federal agencies that have come along and are writing the laws on how these private sector businesses should operate, their job is to enforce what's already on the books. But are they not just writing laws?
Yes, they are. And in fact, the ratio is about 21. I call it the unconstitutionality index, and I like to look at like the number of laws Congress puts out, which is around 150 a year. You're talking about a few dozen laws that Congress issues and the president signs into law. But meanwhile, agencies do at least 3,000. And in the past few years, when I've been on the show talking with you, I would say, there's 3,200 rules. For a brief instant, Trump got them below 3,000. But I've just come across new data from the Federal Register archives, and where we thought there were 3,200 rules last year, there actually has been a big jump up to 4,400 that have recently been disclosed for 2021. So I was wondering, with all of this new reset legislation, where are all of the rules? Well, it's starting to, the chicken's coming home to roost, I guess you could say, or the Halloween pumpkin's coming home to roost. We're starting to see it reflected in the numbers. So far this year, the count tally is kind of low. We're around 2,500 rules, but I'm expecting that we're going to see that increase as well, and we're going to see that happen a lot. So Congress will pass these big sweeping legislative enactments and then just hand it off to the agencies to write these rules, making their own rules. And part of the fight we're having is when agencies are exceeding their bounds. I would argue, too, that Congress is exceeding its own bounds by enacting legislation that it ought not be doing. So we've got kind of a two-pronged problem. We've got to deal with the administrative state and its excesses, and we've got to do something about a Congress that thinks it can legislate everything under the sun. So it's a larger problem than just the regulatory agencies and even them doing their own dark matter lawmaking, so to speak.
Sure. We're talking with Wayne Cruz, Senior Fellow and Vice President of Policy at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. About and they come out with this every year, and Wayne is really the guy that kind of oversees it, I believe, 10,000 commandments. And it talks about something that, Wayne, you know, I'm thinking, is there anybody in Congress that, or anybody in Washington, besides people like yourself and organizations like yours, that are raising the red flag on how these regulations are burying businesses, are intimidating businesses, are stifling businesses, are sweeping away a lot of new businesses that might want to come in because of looking at all of the things that they have to go through? Is there anybody, is there any spokesman out there? Is there anybody, is there a Paul Revere sounding the alarm on this besides you?
Well, There are loads of people concerned about this. You know, so much of the emphasis is on taxing and spending, and I think you're right. It's got to be a huge emphasis on the regulatory state. I've been lucky. I mean, I've had members of Congress and in the Senate circulate the 10,000 Commandments report, for example, among their colleagues. Senator Mike Lee has done that. Senator Rand Paul. Back in the day, Ron Paul circulated the report. So I think, you know, there's a lot of attention to this. The problem is getting traction on doing major regulatory reform, because you know how this tends to work. Companies will finally go along with the regulation. You have this so-called phenomenon of rent seeking, where some companies actually like the regulation because that ends up keeping out smaller competitors like of the very kind you're talking about. So you end up with there's a little bit of a synergy sometimes that shouldn't be there, or that we wish weren't there, between business and government. And you'll see that sometimes in antitrust interventions that actually hurt competitors rather than help customers. Or, you know, even environmental regulations can be that way. Big companies can put up with some environmental regulations if it means their competitors can't.
Yeah.
And they can raise their prices and make up the difference. And, you know, so on down the line with food safety regulations. And so you got to break the problem up. You got to say, okay, well, there's what regulations do we get rid of that we don't need at all? Like, you know, a regulatory reduction commission. And there's pushes for that in Congress. There's pushes for disclosure. But in the way the political scene is divided now, and, you know, the 50-50 Senate, and even had Democrats crossing the aisle to do some things on regulatory dark matter and guidance documents and general regulatory disclosure. But in the heated environment we're in right now, all of that is evaporated. That's why I say one of the things to do is to put hearings together and put things in the record with data and costs and numbers and all that sort of thing. So the reforms can be done. And, you know, it has happened before. Back in the 90s, as I mentioned, it was small business regulatory relief that was on everybody's mind. You had all the governors in Washington complaining about unfunded mandates. We're not quite in that state right now, but we could be. I mean, as if the economy continues to deteriorate, if businesses continue to suffer, eventually people catch on that it's not just government spending and it's not just the economy, but it's also government's intervention in the economy, regulating economic activities, regulating environment, regulating health and safety, inflicting too much paperwork, doing too much resetting, doing too much building back better. And,
yeah.
And then we decide, you know, we decide to have a transition and move to something to free the economy up. And I always end this stuff on an optimistic note. I always say that most regulations haven't been written. Most jobs haven't been created yet. Most of the world's wealth hasn't been created yet. If we can wall off the future from the regulatory state, that might have some bipartisan appeal. I would like to think it does.
Yeah.
Eventually.
Well, we've got, you know, organizations in Washington supposedly that fight on behalf of businesses. I think of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the National Federation of Independent Businesses. Supposedly the SBA, which is a part of the government, Small Business Administration. So are these people doing the job to sound the alarm?
I think in their own areas, yeah, they're doing a lot of things, and they do great polling, talking about the concerns of small business and so forth. I'm glad you mentioned the Small Business Administration, because it used to be, it's not anymore, but it used to be a key part of looking at the scope of the regulatory state. They even worked on reports looking at the aggregate costs of regulation and the effects it has on the economy, kind of putting it in perspective and its proportion related to the taxing and spending and such. But that element of SBA that you saw back in the first George Bush era is gone. You don't have the early second George Bush, you don't have that push for paying attention to the cost of regulation. Instead, we've got kind of the opposite now with Biden. He has a whole series of what he calls, and it's his phrase, whole of government regulatory interventions for, you name the progressive cause. He has whole of government initiatives for what he calls climate crisis, for equity, for long COVID, for digital currency, for competition policy, which he just assembled a big White House consortium with department heads and agency heads all getting together. And he's, rather than, you know, we're talking about laws that go too far and regulations that go too far, the whole of government campaign that Biden is pushing now as kind of the point of the spear of the current progressive movement is having the federal government spearhead these big amorphous initiatives like competition policy and crisis, and it's using the heft of the federal government. The federal government is so big now. You talked about the SBA. Even the SBA brags about the federal government being the largest purchaser of goods and services on earth. Other departments will say, well, the federal government's the biggest employer in the United States. So they'll use all of that the spending, the contracting power, the procurement, all of this massive, not monopoly, but monopsony as a monopoly buyer monopsony power that the federal government has to push these whole of government regulatory initiatives in all of these different areas. So the short-term outlook, while the longer-term outlook, I'm optimistic. The short-term, I think we've got a lot of concerns, and I hope that the new Congress will look at these whole of government initiatives and explain the problem with this and why this is not the way you govern. Government is supposed to be limited and do a few certain things well. I always say, you know, pick a national bird, but otherwise, you know, leave us alone. But that's not the way this administration sees things. It's Halloween, so it's a horror show.
I think you're right, Wayne. I think you're right. It's called 10,000 Commandments, the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Wayne Cruz, who oversees it, and they come out with this on an annual basis. And gosh, it's so important that there are people and organizations like yours, Wayne, that keep this in the forefront. Thank you so very much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. I always enjoy talking to you. Take care.
Our pleasure. Thank you, sir. All right. Going to take a break. When we come back, among other things, the Tampa Bay Times finally comes out with its pick for Florida governor. Is it a trick or is it a treat? We're going to take a look at it.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hello there, Tampa Bay. This is former NFL and college football coach Jimmy Johnson. Listen to the Kelly Kelly Show every Monday starting at 5 p.m. They can sure use the attention.
And this is former Major League Baseball player, Hall of Famer Wade Boggs. I also hope you listen to the Kelly Kelly Show every Monday starting at 5 p.m. They can darn sure use the money.
Hi there. This is marine wildlife artist and conservationist Dr. Guy Harvey. Please listen to the Kelly Kelly Show every Monday starting at 5 p.m. They need to feel worthy.
Do you have questions about health insurance, life insurance, or Medicare? Then Just Ask Angela. That's right, Just Ask Angela every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. right here on the Tantalk Radio Network. Angela will discuss topics relating to individual, family, and group health insurance plans, Medicare Advantage, Medigap, supplemental plans, and much more. Find guidance in navigating the confusing world of health insurance on Just Ask Angela every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. and visit our website, justaskangela.com.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Something strange in your neighborhood.
Hello. I'm out.
I was working in the lab late one night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight. For my monster from his slab began.
Hey, we are back on Freedom Works, and I think we have our buddy from do we, Angelo Cerasi with us, Ed? Thought I heard his voice while I was talking. Anyway, no problem. We're going to talk a little bit about the Tampa Bay Times, as a matter of fact, and who they have now come out in recommendation for the governorship of the state of Florida. And believe it or not, they have decided between Ron DeSantis, the current governor, and Charlie Crist, the Democrat that is trying to unseat DeSantis. They have decided that Charlie Crist is their pick. They say the governor should represent all Floridians, including those who disagree with him or did not vote for him. They say that Charlie Crist would do that. They mentioned that DeSantis actually only got about 49.6% of the vote in the last election, so he barely won the vote at the time. But they also call him a bully. They call him a bully. And then they point to some televised event that he had at the University of South Florida for a photo op with kids that had masks on behind him. And when he turned to them and said, "Kids, you don't have to wear those masks. Please take them off." They somehow thought he was bullying the kids when he did that. They say he is a divider. They call Crist a decent man who always asks, "What do you think?" or "What would you do?" So they think they. I went through this editorial recommending Charlie Crist, and honestly, I didn't find one thing that they would say about what Charlie Crist has done. In all the years that Charlie Crist has been a politician in Florida and a congressman, and he was governor. Remember that years ago as a Republican? They don't talk about how he's changed from one side to the other. They just go after DeSantis. Well, I got news for the Wall Street Journal, Tampa Bay Times. I think that DeSantis looks like he's going to win by lots of points here, maybe 12 to 15 points over Charlie Crist, mainly because he's doing a lot of good things. And people like the way he's taking control of the government, kept the schools open, gone after woke policy, whether it's from Walt Disney or from certain schools. He's brought the parents back when it comes to education. I mean, I don't know what they're going to, I don't know what they expect. He did a great job, I think, with how they handled Hurricane Ian. I think he did an incredible job with the way they handled COVID-19. So, I don't know. We'll see. Do we have Angelo with us? We do? Okay. Our eye in the northern sky, Angelo Ceresi. Angelo, I wasn't sure if you were with us or not, buddy. How you doing?
Oh, very good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Happy Halloween.
Thank you, sir. Are you going to go out trick-or-treat, or are you going to turn the light on in your house? Make sure that people...
Oh, absolutely. We got the kids coming out tonight.
Good. Do you have a big turnout there when in your neighborhood usually?
Yes, we do. We do. We usually do. My wife's got the candy all set.
Oh, that's great.
She puts them in bags and hands them out to the kids, you know?
Yeah.
Both of us do.
Well, you know, there's this big thing about this worry, and it's been that way maybe for some years now, about the little guys out there and what somebody might put into the candy and stuff like that. Now we've got the concern about that, was it fentanyl or something? And those little
fentanyl, the candy. Yeah,
that's very scary, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I mean, unbelievable. Just like, remember years ago with the Tylenol?
Mm-hmm.
Bottles there?
Very much so. That was back, gosh, that goes back to the 70s.
Yep, late 70s, early 80s.
That's right. That's right. So let's get back to the election, because in 8 days, we've got it coming up. And among the many races is that very interesting race in New York between Kathy Hochul, who's the current governor, and Lee Zeldin. And it looks like every time I talk with you, Lee Zeldin is either inched closer or maybe at this point, Angelo, he may be ahead of her when it comes to how the people are reacting. What do you think?
Well, if any time now to take back New York, now's the time to do it. He's right up there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everybody I've talked to, you know, the biggest thing is crime, inflation, you know, everything other than what Kathy Hochul has been talking about, the unelected governor.
Right. She was not elected. That's right. They put her in after Cuomo resigned.
She's every position she's had, she's been appointed to. Never won an election, you know? Well, maybe she did. I don't know. I think she was appointed as a congressperson at one time. But during the debate, all she kept talking about was the abortion issue and trying to link Lee Zeldin to Donald Trump, a denier of the election and all that. That's all she kept talking about. When he brought up crime, she says, "Why are you so worried about that?" Like she could care less.
It did come off a little. I think she didn't mean to come off quite that way, but I know what you mean about she would. Why are you focusing on that? As if it sounded almost
like,
as if, well, it's not
right,
that important.
It's like she's taking care of it, you know.
Right. How many debates, Angelo, have those two had? Have they only had one?
Just the one. Just the one. She won't debate anymore.
Oh,
like
okay.
All the Democrats.
Yeah, there's a lot of them that won't. Sort of like that situation going on in Pennsylvania Senate race between Oz and Fetterman.
Right. I mean, and then they had the, in Pennsylvania, they had early balloting before the debates.
That's right.
Before he even consented to a debate, which I think he was forced into doing.
He didn't want to do it.
You know, he didn't want to do no debate. You know, just like Hobbs in was it Arizona? She doesn't want to debate. You know, the Democrats, they're following the playbook of Joe Biden. You know?
Speaking of Joe Biden, they don't want to debate.
And the thing is, they have this early voting. You know what they should do?
What?
No debate, no early voting. That's what they should do. Right? You want to play that game.
I've often wondered how much a debate really does, because people, by the time the debates roll around, maybe they, I don't know. I think people are already taking their positions on the field, if you know what I mean. People, they've made up their mind.
You saw the Fetterman debate. I mean, the Democrats tried to pull the wool over everybody's eyes.
Yeah, that's true. There are some people maybe that were shocked.
And then they would have changed their vote, just like in Biden, when the media held back on the Hunter Biden deal and all this other stuff.
True.
Right?
Very true.
People would have changed their minds.
Yeah.
And in this way, the media influenced the election. Yeah, they cheated by doing that.
Yeah,
That's cheating.
They did suppress. That's no question about that.
They suppressed that stuff. That's cheating.
True. True.
No matter how you look, they can say whatever they want. The Democrats, because the media is part of the Democratic Party, and they cheated.
A little bit later in the show, Angela, we're going to do the top 10 Biden gaffes. And there were so many that it was hard to pick 10, if you want to know the truth. But where is he on the election campaign trail right now?
He's hiding, because they don't want him around. And actually, what message can they tell the people? They don't have any. Are they going to brag about the price of gasoline? It's almost $4 a gallon back again in New York, right?
Yeah, is that I mean, I'm not surprised, despite what he's doing with the Federal Reserve oil, or not the Federal Reserve, but the oil reserves, I meant, pulling all of our oil out of the oil reserves, you know, just before the elections to try to bring the price of gas down, going over and begging prostrate in front of Saudi Arabia to please, please put more oil out on the market. Here, let me give you another fist bump. Maybe that'll help.
I just put I keep my thing and try to keep it at a half a tank. It cost me over $45, to put gas in one car, $40 of gas in another car. This is like a half a tank. It's cost me almost $100 to put gas in my car.
Yeah.
My wife goes grocery shopping. There's items on the shelf sometimes. Prices are way up. Unbelievable.
Yeah, and there's another thing coming. Now that we're moving into November, it's the price of heating oil. It's the price of heating oil. All of the northern states that depend on, keeping warm. What are they going to do?
Our gas and electric is going to go up 20 to 25%.
Wow.
Here in New York.
That is really going to make a difference. I don't know if you really had a cold snap before next Tuesday. If you really had a cold snap, I wonder if that would affect the election. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I'm telling you, I hope the prices go up to actually $4 a gallon so it affects the election, so the people can really see what's going on. This is all made by the Democrats. This is an artificial increase because they don't want you to drive your cars. You know what I'm saying? They don't want you to be out there because you're polluting the air. You know what I'm saying? They're pushing all the electric issue. You know.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Look at your ads on TV for a car. Car ads, automobile ads. They're pushing all the EVs, electric vehicles. That's all they're pushing.
Ed will tell you there aren't enough electric recharge stations in the country. You can hardly make it across the country if you had an electric vehicle. You have to time it right.
I know. I mean, they're putting the cart before the horse. That's what they're doing.
Well, first of all, they shouldn't be involved in electric vehicles and spending money on this kind of thing, because the free market will get to it even more efficiently, better. It's not like the free market doesn't want to do what people want, and it doesn't want to create electric vehicles. But if, you know, we just had a guy on, Wayne Cruz, talking about all the bureaucratic red tape that keeps entrepreneurial people that might create even better electric cars, you know, and bring them to the market even sooner. You know, how it impedes them when you have the government involved in the private sector this way.
And then they keep harping on the abortion issue. Look at all these babies they have killed, right? Who could have found a cure for cancer? Who could have found a cure for heart disease? Who could have found a cure for mankind in those babies had they lived.
That's right.
They don't think about that.
No, they don't. You know, how many Einsteins might...
Their agenda. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I just agree with you. How many more Einsteins might we have had?
That's right.
Yeah.
They just to push their issue or their agenda, this is what they have done. And the American people have to realize what's going on. I mean, I cannot believe that they would put, that the American people would put these people back into power again.
Yeah.
After what's been going on. In less than a year, they have destroyed this country. They've made this country into a third world nation. That we have to beg for oil.
It's crazy. I've got a very important question for you.
Mm-hmm.
It's very important. You ready? Who is your most favorite monster?
My most favorite monster?
Yeah, or monster movie. Yeah, this is important. Think about it. I don't want you to just blurt something out. Was it Dracula or maybe Frankenstein or The Mummy? Or is there... How about Reagan and The Exorcist?
Well, The Exorcist was a pretty good movie. Actually, Abbott Costello and the Mummy.
Abbott and Costello. You know what? You're right. They made a bunch of movies involving monsters.
That's right, with Bela Lugosi and all that.
Yeah. And they meet Abbott and Costello meet Frankenstein and I think Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde or something.
Yeah.
I never thought of Abbott and Costello. Hey, that's a good answer.
That was one of my favorite shows, was Abbott Costello Meets Frankenstein.
Wow. Very, very good, my friend. Well, listen, thank you very much. As usual, every Monday we enjoy having you on. And I know you'll dish out all kinds of candy to the kids.
And I'll eat some myself.
And hold on, exactly, just like me, hold on to a bunch of it for yourself. Thanks so much,
Angelo. Absolutely.
All right, buddy. Thank you
so much again, and have a happy Halloween.
Thanks, Angelo.
We'll see you.
Okay.
Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Sounds good. There he goes. Angelo Ceresi, our eye in the northern sky. All right, we're going to take our final break. When we come back, China, Russia, working to dethrone the dollar as the world's currency, and there's trouble afoot here in the U.S. bond market. Are we on the precipice of a financial U.S. collapse? And... The top 10 biggest gaffes by Joe Biden.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Are you a writer, inventor? Do you have questions about your intellectual property rights? Well, tune in every Tuesday and Thursday morning at 11 o'clock for Joy on Paper. Once a month, I will have a special guest, the writer's legal eagle, Bill Larson of Larson & Larson, who can answer your questions. Protect your valuable work. Email me your questions to patsy.radio@gmail.com and then listen in every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 a.m. right here on Tampa Bay's Tan Talk Radio Network. That's patsy.radio@gmail.com.
Hey, you new to the area or just want to know about the best hidden gems and upcoming events? Stay tuned. Be Local Buzz with Devin takes you to these places, introduces you to the best businesses, and tells you about upcoming buzz. Preset your radio to Tan Talk 1340 AM or 106.1 FM every Thursday from 4 to 5. That is the Be Local Buzz with Devin on Tan Talk 1340 AM and 106 FM every Thursday from 4 to 5. Looking forward to speaking with you.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
I can't remember, Ed. Is that theme music from The Exorcist? Trying to remember.
Michael Myers Halloween.
Yeah. So Ed, let me ask you the same question I asked D'Angelo. Do you have a favorite monster? Do you have a favorite Halloween movie? Do you have one in particular?
I think the scariest monster is probably the one I've seen is probably The Creeper.
The Creeper.
Jeepers Creepers.
Oh, okay.
There's a three movie. I think the third one just came, or fourth one just came out.
Did it?
Yeah, I'm but I think the all-time scariest thing was Jason with the hockey mask.
Oh, yes, in the Halloween
ruined,
series.
Yeah, and then they ruined it by making 17 movies after that.
So. They have. In fact, this is Jamie Lee Curtis. She's gone through over 30 years of doing those movies.
Halloween, this last one she says is the last. Mm-hmm. It's called Halloween Ends. And they kill Michael Myers again.
Well, they kill him every time.
Yeah, I know.
Of course, he comes back.
Yeah, but this... I don't want to ruin it for you. You're not going to see it, are you?
Probably not. Go ahead.
They put him in one of those... I don't know. You ever see where they demolish like a car or something? They put in these...
You got compactor.
Not a compactor. No. These two big things that turn, and you put it right in the middle, and it just totally tears it all apart.
Okay.
Falls into that.
Oh, my goodness. Kind of gory.
But, you know...
Of course, when you're a kid... Certain movies that would never scare you as an adult. But I saw a movie as an adult that I think was the scariest movie I've ever seen, which was The Exorcist. That scared the life out of me. And I was an adult.
There's one I just watched the other day that I remember as a kid that scared the bejesus out of me. It was this little doll that ran underneath the couch.
Oh.
And Karen Black is in it.
Oh, I remember.
And I downloaded it. I got to look.
And is that a Chucky doll or something?
No, it's not
like
Chucky. I have to look up the name, but Karen Black is in it and Terror of something, whatever it is.
Okay. All right, fair enough. All right. So China and Russia may be working toward a new gold-backed currency in a move that would aim to dethrone the dollar as the primary reserve currency of the world. Now, they say in this story that any such currency move would unlikely be achieved. It says here, the U.S. dollar remains the safest and most convenient and most widely used currency in Asia and in the world today. That's what they say at the Heritage Foundation. And we would hope that that is true. But these days, I'm beginning to worry about the strength of the dollar. And if people are starting to think that perhaps it isn't quite as strong as one would like to imagine. Trouble is brewing with U.S. Treasury bonds, which is prompting concern among investors and some policymakers. U.S. Treasury bonds are a key pillar of the whole global financial system. But there are signs that the pool of interested buyers of our debt could be in danger of drying up as an unintended consequence of rising U.S. interest rates. Now, you would think that rising rates would mean that more people would want to buy our debt because they're going to get a higher return, right? The interest rate, when you buy our debt, the government pays you a higher rate of interest these days. Well, the problem is that we still got the old debt out there, and that debt isn't being refinanced because their interest rates are lower than the new interest rates and the new debt. So that becomes a little bit of an issue. So there you go. All right, Ed, before we get to the top 10 gaffes of Joe Biden, and we got so many of them, World Series is on right now. I think we're going to game 3 tonight. I don't know if you've been following it. I want to ask you real quickly about that. And secondly, do we have a report on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers?
I think the World Series is Tuesday night.
I thought they were starting the third game tonight. I may be wrong. Okay,
because it would go against Monday Night Football.
Okay, so it's tomorrow night.
I believe it's Tuesday night.
All right, I'll take your word
for it. In Philadelphia.
I may have been wrong about that.
In Philadelphia.
In Philly. So the first two games were in Houston, and it's 1-1.
And the Bucs are off because they didn't lose on Sunday because they lost on Thursday.
Oh, that's right. So I forgot about that. Okay. Sounds good. All right, it's time for our top 10. And I think this is kind of interesting. It comes from the New York Post. It's kind of a conservative newspaper. There are so many. But here we go. Top 10 gaffes by Joe Biden. Number 10. Number 10 occurred in January of this year when called the Imaginary Civil Rights Arrest. Biden falsely claimed of his past civil rights activism, and he said that I walked other grounds because I'm so damn old. I was there. It seems like yesterday the first time I got arrested. He's never been arrested in any civil rights movement. But he seems to remember that. I wonder if he really believes it. All right, number 9. State of the Union switcheroo. This was in March of this year. Biden tried to give a ringing rhetorical boost to Ukraine during his first State of the Union speech, but he accidentally praised Iran. He substituted Iran. Number 8. Renewable energy flaw. Biden's famous grasp of mathematics leads him to make grandiose and untrue claims about his policies. Said if your home is powered by safer, cheaper, cleaner electricity like solar or heat pumps, you can take about $500 a month off your bill on average. It wasn't $500 a month. It was $500 a year. But he didn't realize it. Okay, number 7. Kleptocracy. Biden knocked bleary-eyed as he pushed for additional Ukraine aid. He said, I'm also sending to Congress a comprehensive package of that will enhance our underlying effort to accommodate the Russian oligarchs and make sure we take their ill-begotten gains, he said. And he said, we're going to accommodate them. In other words, he made no sense. Number 6. Senator or president, 15 months after his presidential inauguration, he still had a hard time remembering his job title, always reverting on back to calling himself a senator, which he held for 36 years. Number 5, I'm starting to get like Biden. Scholes Parkland dad. Biden's performance at a celebration of new gun control laws went off the books. First, he yelled at a grieving father who had lost his 17-year-old son in the massacre at the Florida high school in 2018. He told him to sit down. He said, you'll hear what I have to say. He's snapping at the grieving father. Number 4. Horror of the Holocaust. When Biden visited Israel, he marred the arrival ceremony. He said, I will once more return to the hollow ground of Yad Shav to honor the 6 million Jews whose lives were stolen. He said, we must every day continue to bear witness, to keep alive the truth, and to honor the Holocaust. Before correcting himself to say horror of Holocaust. Okay, number 3. Selfish troops. For the first time since 9/11, he visited a region without American troops being engaged. He said, we'll always honor the bravery and selfishness and sacrifices of our armed service. All right, number 2. Cancer revealed. Did you know he had cancer, Ed?
Again?
I think he was trying to make that point. He made a July speech. He said, you have to put on your windshield wipers to get literally the oil slick off the window. What the hell is he talking about there? Talking about how refineries were soiling his childhood neighborhood. He said, that's why I and so damn many other people I grew up with have cancer. Okay. And finally, number 1. The Where's Jackie moment. One of Biden's most atrocious verbal misfires in his long career was when he sought out Indiana Representative Jackie Walorski at a White House conference 8 weeks after her high-profile death in a car crash. He said, where's Jackie? Where is she? Stand up. It was kind of sad, actually. So there you go. We thank you so much for being with us. We will be back on Wednesday. Be safe. Happy Halloween. Remember, freedom works.
Walking through the streets of Soho in the rain, was looking for the place called the Whole Foods.
Clearwater
FM 106.1,
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3,
WZHR Zephyr Hills
FM 104.3.
Listen.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Liberty Mutual Insurance.
I'm Deborah Rodriguez. Interest rate hikes could be working. New numbers from the Commerce Department show the economy overcame high inflation and interest rates and grew at an annual rate of 2.6% in the third quarter, reversing 2 straight quarters of decline. Bob Dahl at Crossmark Global Investments.
The inflation number in the GDP report was a little better than we saw in the last quarter. Inflation's still a problem, but it is lessening as a problem as expected, thanks due to the Fed's actions.
Factors in the rise, increases in consumer and government defense spending. A senior Ukrainian military officer is accusing Russia